The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I can't believe it's the last show of the week already. We are at Friday, and we have a lot to get to on today's program. We'll be talking in just a moment here about President Trump's visit to the UK. He's in town, or he's in the nation, the country. He was just down the road from us last night at Blenheim Palace. And I think either tonight or tomorrow morning, he's off to Scotland after he wraps up his remaining meetings and such in and around the London area. So we'll update you on that here. He made some interesting comments that were featured on some of the news sites here this morning. Also, big news yesterday, Peter Strzok's 10-hour testimony before the House Judiciary and House Oversight committees. There was the lead investigator of the so-called Trump-Russian collusion story or investigation, surrounded by a team of lawyers refusing to answer questions, carefully protected by all the Democrats on those committees. I mean, if you want to see anything about obstruction and collusion, it was on full display yesterday for sure, right there in that that 10-hour hearing. We've got quite a few sound bites to play from that here in just a bit as well. And if we have time, and I suspect that we won't because I kept adding a few more sound bites as I was preparing, but we can hopefully, if we have a little extra time, we can tie up a few loose ends from the study yesterday where we talked about visiting historic sites and pairing that together with your newfound love for reading. Thanks to all of the people who've emailed about what they've tried to do this week to jolt themselves into a reading plan, a regular daily reading plan, in addition to our regular prayers and our Bible study, of course. So we've gotten some really good feedback, and also not just feedback of people saying that they're doing it more or trying to, but they're also expressing just how enjoyable it's been. A source of delight and joy, as we played for you earlier in the week from historian David McCullough, an infinite source, as he put it, of pleasure. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump, he continues to shake things up worldwide. he's made some comments here that people are reacting to here in the U.K., I mean. The AP headline says, Trump dishes up fresh dose of chaos aimed at Theresa May and at Londoners. And, of course, a popular site in the United States. If you went to the Drudge Report this morning, you might have seen a big headline there saying, UK trumped. UK trumped. A lot of these headline-grabbing comments came from an interview President Trump had with The Sun here in the UK, an interview in which he criticized Miss May's Brexit deal, saying that it might prevent a trade deal with the United States. Here's a sampling, clip one.
I would have done it much differently. I actually told Theresa May how to do it, but she didn't agree with it. She didn't listen to me.
What did she say?
She didn't listen. No, I told her how to do it. That will be up to her to say. But I told her how to do it. She wanted to go a different route.
That's President Trump saying he told Theresa May how to do it, but she didn't listen to him. And then he went on to talk about how that the way that she's going about this. I mean, it's not what the voters wanted. This is a clip two.
Well, I think the deal that she's striking is not what the people voted on. It's a much different deal than the people voted on. It was not the deal that was in the referendum.
So he's saying that this is going to affect trade with the United States in a negative way in a wide-ranging interview. He went on and talked about how he really likes Boris Johnson, who just quit Theresa May's government on Monday. And he talked about how great of a prime minister Boris Johnson would make. He says this in his interview with The Sun. He takes the occasion to again slam the military spending in Europe. He called for Germany to increase its spending. Germany's at something like 1.1% of GDP, and they're just trying to get him up to at least 2%. The president believes, as rich as Germany is, that Germany should be spending 4%. That would amount to, I think Richard factored put this together. He said it would amount to about $164 billion on defense. I mean, that's Germany spending a massive amount of money on defense, on military, on armaments. And this is what the president of the United States wants. The president of the United States, he wants this. Well, in this interview, again, where he touched on a lot of topics, he talked about defense spending, not paying their fair share into NATO, and then, of course, the ongoing complaint that he has about all the tariffs and the unfair trade practices. The Sun, again, they conducted the interview, and they gave basically a rundown in writing with the accompanying article talking about the comments aimed at Prime Minister Theresa May, and then how he was critical of EU leaders. He really criticized the mayor of London. I'll play a clip on that in just a second. But he blamed him for the rising crime rates in the capital city. Talked about Boris Johnson being a good prime minister, or making a good prime minister. And then again, like I said, we've covered some of this already. But when you think of the prophetic significance, I don't know if it got posted today or yet today or if it's coming up soon, but there's an article about the emerging ties between China and Germany, trade ties, something like a $23.5 billion deal between these two nations. It just happened a few days ago. And the Trumpet article, again, you can see this at thetrumpet.com sometime today. It says U.S. President Donald Trump ramped up the tariff dispute this week by announcing a 10% tariff on $200 billion of Chinese goods. It says the new tariff is designed to inflict as much pain on the Chinese economy as possible. That's quoting from Geopolitical Futures. And then it talks about how that Trump has been increasing the tariffs even faster than China expected. And that China is already Germany's largest trade partner, and how Germany's looking for, you know, more trade avenues since the United States is taking the action that it's taking. But we quote PJ Media in this Trumpet piece, which said the German-Chinese realignment is a warning that not everything would go America's way if things get nasty. That's what we want to keep our eyes on here. A lot of these statements, you have a lot of Americans who are cheering President Trump on, and there's probably more than a few cheering him on even here in the UK, those that are very upset by the way Brexit is unfolding. But what we want to watch for is what happens when things get nasty. We're in the midst of the temporary resurgence, saved from the radical left temporarily. That was another theme from those committee hearings yesterday. Boy, you see just how close we would have never, ever known any of this had it not been for what happened there at the U.S. election in November of 2016. We'd certainly never know about Peter Strzok and what he was up to all through that year and has continued to do. He still works at the FBI, incredibly. He's still working. He still has security clearance. I mean, it was too much for Bob Mueller and his team. But he's still there at the FBI. He's still well protected. He's still got the team of lawyers. There's a temporary resurgence for sure. But what happens when things get nasty? I mean, you see how nasty it is in the United States right now. Well, those comments that he made yesterday about London and the mayor of London, I mentioned on yesterday's program, the blimp that they were going to fly around downtown London to protest President Trump. Here he is talking about London and whether or not the city, or at least the leadership of the city, welcomed him the way that they should have. Clip 3.
to make me feel unwelcome. No reason for me to go to London. I used to love London as a city. I haven't been there in a long time. I think your mayor has done a terrible job. But when they make you feel unwelcome, why would I stay there? Now, and when I say that, I'm talking about government, because the people of the UK agree with me.
The people of the UK agree with me. And there were more than a few newspapers this morning in the UK that did not like that statement. They did not like that statement at all. You know the way the media feel about him. Well, they were ahead of his arrival. They were really giving a lot of coverage to the blimp, to the protests. There was a headline at the Times yesterday or the day before. It says here, Trump visit, police are beefed up to confront 100,000 protesters. 100,000 protesters. I mean, this was going to be massive. And that's what they were predicting. An all-night protest on the perimeter fence called Keep Trump Awake is scheduled to start at 8 p.m. They were to line around the U.S. Embassy where he stayed for the night, I guess. Their idea was to keep him awake, using drums and plastic horns, pots, pans, bring everything. Well, they didn't quite get 100,000 people. It was more like 400. And the protest didn't last, I think, until something like 9:30 p.m. And I think President Trump probably was still awake. This is a follow-up story from the Times. Same newspaper. Got the crowd size just a little bit wrong. I mean, they can do that. President Trump can't get the crowd. If he gets the crowd size wrong, they will never let him live it down. If he says the crowd was big and it was semi-big, oh, he's lying. He's deceitful. This is the same publication. It says about 400 protesters did start making a din as Mr. Trump left in his helicopter at 7:10 p.m. for Blenheim Palace. Within an hour, only 50 protesters were left banging the fence with sticks and blowing horns and whistles. 50! With the pauses in between getting longer as their arms and throats grew tired. And then this, they had been planning to keep Mr. Trump awake throughout the night with pots, pans, and horns. In the event, however, the park was closed at 9:30 p.m., and the 25 protesters remaining left peacefully and politely to the sound of a glockenspiel playing Magic Moments from Burt Bacharach. It's crazy. And then here's President Trump with the interview, or during the interview, saying, look, there's a lot of British who agree with me. Certainly they do on immigration. A lot of them do on Brexit. They just, they have to kind of lay low, just like the embassy suggested Americans do yesterday. Because you know how the radical left reacts. If someone shows up as a supporter of this particular president, well, that's, as I say, ongoing. And maybe we can follow up. Of course, there's the meeting he has coming up, too, with Vladimir Putin. And I'm sure that's going to be scrutinized closely by the major media. We'll talk more about that next week. And also on anything left over from his visit here in the UK and this weekend in Scotland. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll take you through some of the highlights, or I guess lowlights, depending on how you look at it, from yesterday's hearings with Peter Strzok. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Like many people, I had and expressed personal political opinions during an extraordinary presidential election. Many contained expressions of concern for the security of our country, opinions that were not always expressed in terms I'm proud of. But having worked in national security for two decades and proudly served in the U.S. Army, those opinions were expressed out of deep patriotism and an unyielding belief in our great American democracy.
And if you were looking for an apology, that was the closest that Peter Strzok got to one yesterday in his opening statement, saying that, some of the things that he expressed, the way that he expressed it, he wasn't proud of it. But look, those opinions, those strong opinions, that profanity, that anti-Trump animus, well, that just sprung from his deep patriotism, don't you know? He's a patriot. He's an American. He believes in American democracy. No remorse. Not one ounce of repentance. As the Spectator said, it was a long non-apology apology. One of those things that you see so often today. I mean, we would have just been floored, all of us. What if he got up before that table, sat down in front of those congressmen and said, you know what? I didn't think that those text messages would ever see the light of day, but now that they have, I'm glad that they did. It's brought a lot of hurt and pain into my life and into my family, into my marriage. And it certainly does show that I was motivated by bias. And I am deeply sorry for that. I wish I could go back and change it. I wish my thinking was straight. And I'm so grateful for the mercy that's been extended to me from the FBI. Nothing like that. I mean, later on in the hearing, when one of his protectors on the Democratic side asked him, well, why didn't you come in here and plead the fifth? He said, well, I haven't done anything wrong. He had to catch himself because people were laughing in the background. And said, well, I mean, there were some text messages, yes. I mean, and I have done some harm to my family and so on and so forth. But you listen to bits and pieces of that 10-hour hearing. And, well, Spectator, I think, describes it well. He comes in, he waltzes in with his team of lawyers. Spectator says the Peter Strzok hearing was a travesty, starting with the fact that he testified as a cocooned, lawyered-up government employee still working for the FBI. It's outrageous that he hasn't been fired yet. That alone is proof of the deep state's hold on certain executive branch agencies. That's right. It's an FBI. The FBI is an executive branch agency. And Congress has oversight, which is why you had this hearing. And for 10 hours, Democrats, the radical left, did everything that they could to obstruct, to stonewall, to just talk over someone that's trying to get to the bottom of this. Someone that's getting especially close to an important fact, like Jim Jordan did. As soon as he got there, then he's just basically shouted down. He can't even get to the truth. He can't even get to the testimony. It says here, he still has security clearance and spectator rights. That alone is proof of the deep state's hold on certain executive branch agencies. If the FBI keeps its so-so employees close, it keeps its worst employees ever, its worst employees, rather, even closer. That Strzok could huddle with FBI lawyers while stonewalling a Republican-led committee speaks to the corruption of official Washington and the comparative impotence of Republican administrations. They just can't do anything about it. I mean, no one's held to account. If anyone is held to account, it would be this particular individual. He headed up the investigations. He let Mrs. Clinton off, and as all of his texts obviously prove, he went after, he threw everything at Donald Trump. And they're still going after him. It hasn't stopped. Spectator says, does anyone think an FBI agent who had vowed to stop the candidacy of Barack Obama would have lasted a week in his job, let alone over a year after the discovery of his bias? Does anyone really think that? You look back at the hearing in June with Inspector General Horowitz. I think it was an exchange he had with Lindsey Graham, and Mr. Graham said, you know, look, there comes a point where you're like, okay, this is scandalous here, what's happening. So I guess the question is, who's going to be held to account? Who gets fired? Who goes to jail? Well, to this point, nobody. And in waltzes Peter Strzok, under oath. No apology, no remorse, no repentance, nothing. Just obstinance. From the first minute all the way through to the end. Here's clip 5.
But let me be clear, unequivocally and under oath, not once in my 26 years of defending our nation did my personal opinions impact any official action I took.
So he had all of these personal opinions. He was careful to point out that it wasn't bias. They were just personal opinions, and they in no way influenced the two most significant cases he's worked on, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. But he says all 26 years. I mean, it's his record is impeccable. He has never been influenced by his personal views or opinions. I mean, here we, for 8 years, before Donald Trump ever came along, I mean, we were being lectured. We were being lectured almost every other day from the Obama administration about the unconscious bias that we all have and how it influences what we do. It influences everything we do. The City Journal had a piece in autumn of last year. President Obama denounced unconscious biases against minorities and females in science in 2016. NBC anchor Lester Holt asked Hillary Clinton during a September 2016 presidential debate whether police are implicitly biased against black people. Clinton's answer? Lester, I think implicit bias is a problem for everyone. Not just police. Everyone. It says here, then FBI director. Here's Jim Comey. This would have been Peter Strzok's boss. Then FBI director Jim Comey claimed in a 2015 speech that much research points to the widespread existence of unconscious bias. Many people in our white majority culture, Comey said, react differently to a white face than a black face. It says here, finally, the Obama Justice Department packed off all federal law enforcement agents to implicit bias training So the federal agents had to go off to implicit bias training. The problem was so widespread. And yet now, here is the lead investigator into the so-called Trump-Russia collusion, who can say over and again how much Donald Trump is an idiot or a bigot. He's a disaster. He's abysmal. Hillary's going to win 100 million to zero. The Trump supporters, you can smell them a mile away. You can smell them at Walmart. They're ignorant hillbillies. He can say all those things. He can believe all those things. He can text all those things. And it doesn't affect his work one bit. That's what he testified all through the hearing yesterday. And it really does expose. It exposes the radical left. It exposed the deep state for those that thought it doesn't exist. You know, President Trump himself said, this was a few weeks ago. He said, I didn't really get into this deep state stuff, but boy, the more that's being revealed. It's just like my father said in Saving America temporarily. If your eyes are open to see, it is revealing. It certainly is. This next clip is also part of his opening statement. This is clip 6.
I understand we're living in a political era in which insults and insinuation often drown out honesty and integrity. But the honest truth is that Russian interference in our elections constitutes a grave attack on our democracy. Most disturbingly, it has been wildly successful, sowing discord in our nation and shaking faith in our institutions. I have the utmost respect for Congress's oversight role, but I strongly believe today's hearing is just another victory notch in Putin's belt and another milestone in our enemy's campaign to tear America apart.
So now it's about Russia. Now the Russia-Trump collusion story, now it's just about Russia. All through 2016, and the text messages bear this out. It was one profane word after another describing Trump. We got to stop Trump. We need an insurance policy. Trump can't win this. There's no way he's going to win. Hillary's going to win 100 million to zero. And now these evil acts are revealed. And so now it's about Russia. The Spectator says you could have taken that opening statement from MSNBC. I mean, all of the exchanges, the emails and the texts from 2016 on through to 2017, they clearly show that they were out to get Trump. They never cursed Vladimir Putin. They never said, Putin's doing this. How are we going to stop him? Let's stop Putin. Stop Putin. It was stop Trump. That's what it was all through the investigation. And he's the lead investigator. I mean, he had said also in this hearing that in 2016, he said in the summer of 2016, we had an urgent need to protect the integrity of an American presidential election. In the summer of 2016, there was an urgent need to protect the integrity of the presidential election. And does anyone remember who the president of the United States was in the summer of 2016? Does anyone remember what president said to White House security officials to stand down insofar as pushing back against Vladimir Putin? That would be Barack Obama. In the summer of 2016, well, they were actually hearing a lot a year and 2 years before that. And as we've played before on this program, insiders who've come out since and said, yeah, the Obama administration didn't do anything. They didn't fight it at all. And they didn't do anything in the lead up to the election in 2016 either because they thought Hillary would win. Now it's very serious. Now it's all of, we've got to find Russia. And as far as the collusion, here the investigation's been going on well over a year, at least with Mueller. And if you go back to the summer of 2016, we're going on 2 years now. Nothing. Nothing showing that the Trump administration colluded with Russia. Nothing. And yet here is the lead investigator, after nothing has been found, and he gets up and he testifies yesterday, and the first statement that he makes is that this hearing, even though I respect Congress's oversight role, but this hearing is just another victory notch in Putin's belt. It's amazing. It's amazing. The truth has come out, and the spin continues. There's an exchange here between Mr. Strzok and Congressman Goodlatte, clip 7.
You don't think that it was the bias expressed in your text messages that caused Mr. Mueller to remove you from the investigation?
I do not think that that bias was expressed in those text messages. I cannot speak to why Director Mueller chose to remove me from the investigation, but I can tell you that those text messages are not indicative of bias.
No bias in the text messages, and he doesn't even know why Mueller removed him. So he's in the dark, I guess. And he maintains that all of those biases, Trump supporters stink, ignorant hillbillies, stop Trump. You see, really, like the Spectator brings out, I mean, this proves that he knows he's going to be protected. He knows, it says at Spectator, the cockiness of Strzok at Thursday's hearing is a reflection of the immunity that ruling class mandarins enjoy in liberal Washington. He was testifying from the safety of the deep state and thus knew that he could lie his head off without consequence. He knew it. He knew he could say anything, and he's not going to be held to account. That's the way it is in liberal Washington. How else do you explain this, as the Spectator notes, how else do you explain this unrepentant opening statement with its blatant anti-Trump special pleading? How do you explain it? Well, I can tell you how you explain it. It's by going back to the May-June issue of the Trumpet magazine, saving America from the radical left. Saving America from the radical left. If you remember, the subhead under that article is that people do not realize just how close the nation is to collapse. They do not realize it. And that's what's, again, very revealing about a hearing like yesterday's. And it's also aggravating at the same time, but you could see it coming when the IG, the Inspector General, came out with his report a few weeks ago. Remember the program we did on that? 500 pages of bias, 500 pages revealing bias. And what was it that the IG concluded? There's no bias. So here they've collected all of this evidence. They've exposed this abuse of power, the lying, the cheating. They've exposed the spying. They've exposed the bias. And then yet at the very end, they conclude that, well, there was no bias here. I mean, certainly their hearts were right. So there was no criminal activity. So in comes the lead investigator, and he knows he's been covered. He knows he's been provided a lot of cover from the IG, from the Democrats, from the media. Look at all of them saying that this is just a big circus. This is a waste of time. We've got to concentrate on the families that are being separated at the border. Or we've got to be concentrating on this issue or that issue. Just stonewall after stonewall. Obstruction of justice. Where is the real collusion here? You see it on display. You see just how close the United States came to a total collapse. This is in the same, well, I don't know if it's with Mr. Goodlatte, but here's part of the hearing, clip 8.
Sir, I think it's important when you look at those texts that you understand the context in which they were made and the things that were going on across America. In terms of the text that we will stop it, You need to understand that that was written late at night, off the cuff, and it was in response to a series of events that included then-candidate Trump insulting the immigrant family of a fallen war hero. And my presumption, based on that horrible, disgusting behavior, that the American population would not elect somebody demonstrating that behavior to be president of the United States.
He's talking about the "We Will Stop Him" text message. In the same hearing, when he was pressed further on that particular text, he said, "I don't remember typing it. I don't remember typing that." And then in this particular exchange, he says, "Well, what you have to understand about that particular text is that it was written late at night, off the cuff. And it was in response to a series of events that included candidate Trump insulting this immigrant family, his horrible, disgusting behavior." So you've got to understand the context with this particular text that "I don't remember typing. I don't remember texting." That's a sampling. One of many. As he was spinning and spinning away. Here's clip 9.
"It was in no way, unequivocally, any suggestion that me, the FBI, would take any action whatsoever to improperly impact the electoral process for any candidate. So I take great offense and I take great disagreement to your assertion of what that was or wasn't."
So when I told my FBI coworker, who was working on the case as well, that "We will stop him," it's important for you to know that that was in no way, unequivocally, any suggestion that me or the FBI would take any action to stop him. I mean, you hear the bias in his statement. Forget about the text messages. A horrible, disgusting man. "We will stop him." Well, I did say that. I don't remember saying it, but I did say it. And the reason I said it is because of this, this, and this. I mean, you listen to them talk about how they can't make a mistake. It's good they're being investigated, the FBI, the leadership, because that thinking, it's embedded into the top tier of the agency. Well, no improper behavior could ever happen at my FBI. Same attitude and same spirit came from McCabe, Jim Comey, people over at the Justice Department as well. It's impossible. If it's impossible that anything improper ever happened, then why aren't they just eager to turn over documents to Congress? Why do they just keep giving Congress a little bit of a trickle here and there and then redacting all of the critical information? Or why won't he answer all of the questions? Why do they hide behind the lawyers? And then finally, the testimony that he's been eager to give. He says, the text, look, there's no bias. And look, some of them, they were just made in jest. It was hyperbole. It was this and that. But I can assure you, nothing improper. Candidate Trump, disgusting, horrible. If he says something, I mean, that reveals everything you need to know about President Trump. If he says this or this, you know what you need to know about that man. If I say this, if I say we'll stop him, if I use all kinds of profanity, I want you to know I've got an impeccable record. The hypocrisy and the self-righteousness and the arrogance here, it's stunning. Who is held to account, though? Who's going to be penalized? Here's clip 10.
"I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, at no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took."
Does it sound like a man who's contrite? Who's sorry for what he's done? No wonder he had to catch himself later on in the second half and say, after he said, "I didn't do anything wrong," when people started snickering, no wonder he had to catch himself and say, "Well, I mean, there was some language I should have changed, some texts I shouldn't have sent." But the thinking, the deep-seated thinking, the attitude, is that I'm right. The FBI's right. And Donald Trump and this congressional committee has got it all wrong. This next clip here, it's essentially saying the FBI can do no wrong. Listen to this. It's astounding. Clip 11.
Furthermore, this isn't just me sitting here telling you. You don't have to take my word for it. At every step, at every investigative decision, there are multiple layers of people above me, the assistant director, executive assistant director, deputy director, and director of the FBI, and multiple layers of people below me, section chiefs, supervisors, unit chiefs, case agents, and analysts, all of whom were involved in all of these decisions. They would not tolerate any improper behavior in me any more than I would tolerate it in them. That is who we are as the FBI. And the suggestion that I, in some dark chamber somewhere in the FBI, would somehow cast aside all of these procedures, all of these safeguards, and somehow be able to do this is astounding to me. It simply couldn't happen. And the proposition that that is going on, that it might occur anywhere in the FBI, deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
What you didn't hear at the end of that is the Democrats clapping. They applauded him. They applauded what he said there. They're not interested in getting to the bottom of this. They're not disturbed by someone with this unprecedented level of animus toward a political candidate that he was investigating. They're not interested in getting to the truth. He gets up and says, there is no improper conduct here, and it simply cannot happen. It just, because of the layers, there are layers above me, and those layers, by the way, were McCabe, Comey, Lynch, and Obama. He's got layers above him, and they would not tolerate anything improper. Nor would he tolerate anything improper from them. That's a frightening mindset. That's at the top of the FBI. As I say, it's very revealing just to listen to them talk about how they can't get anything wrong. There is no spirit of humility here, not one ounce of it. The Bible talks about pride going before the fall. There is pride. There is pride in the deep state, and it runs deep. You've heard it in testimony from the others. And I suspect there's going to be a lot more. But then for the Democrats to start applauding that particular statement that you heard there, the Democrats, the ones that hardly hesitate when it comes to going after law enforcement and law enforcement officials, Well, again, they've been lecturing the United States for the past 8 years. The police are wrong. The police are heavy-handed. The police have this implicit bias. The police have this unconscious bias. It goes beyond the police, as Hillary Clinton said. It's all people, especially white people, but all people. Now they're singing a much different tune. Now, all of a sudden, the Democrats are pro-FBI. Now, all of a sudden, the Democrats are pro-corruption in the FBI. I mean, is there any standard that they'll hold to? What you're seeing on display is Donald Trump's opponents justifying any and every form of corruption, any kind of abuse of power, any kind of lying, spying, leaking, you name it. It's all justified. And when the trail of evidence comes forth and you see the bias, and you see what motivated them, well, they just explain it away and say that that's not bias. That's not bias. I'm no different than any other American that just has a few strong opinions. It's a double standard that you can see why. There's guys like Jim Jordan and Devin Nunez and Trey Gowdy. They're trying to get to the facts. Must be a difficult job for them when they're going up against this other side that thinks this man is some kind of a hero. Listen to what one Democratic representative said, clip 12.
Mr. Trump, I don't know where to start. If I could give you a Purple Heart, I would. You deserve one.
He deserves a Purple Heart, as if he sacrificed himself on the battlefield in Afghanistan. He should be praised. Never mind that Mueller fired him or he had to be reassigned at the FBI. He is a hero. In the eyes of the Democrats, in the eyes of the media, he is a hero. He's a man of integrity. He's an honest man with an impeccable record. And for anyone to raise any objection to that record, for anyone to criticize his character, well, that's deeply insulting. Listen to this statement, clip 13.
I wanted to address, when you bring up an integrity issue, and it's interesting you and the gentleman from Texas raised this in a way that almost, you know, approaches, it is insulting.
The gentleman may answer the question.
If you're going to make an accusation,
what I'm
going to
respond to is what I'm saying. I am here under oath. I am not lying. I have never lied under oath, and I never will. And so the insinuation, not even the insinuation, the direct comment that you somehow say you have an integrity issue is insulting.
He's insulted by it. And later on, when someone said, you know, even in this hearing, you got pretty angry. I mean, I looked at your body language and saw a lot of anger. And here's how he explained that. Clip 14.
What you see in my response is a genuine passion for the United States of America. What you see is a passion as a patriot.
I got two more questions.
Gentlemen,
you didn't hear the last statement there where he said is what you see is a genuine anger at people turning it upside down. Saying that because I'm angry or because I have this passion, I must not be a patriot. He's entitled to get angry. He's entitled to curse at Donald Trump. He's entitled to text whatever it is he wants. He can get away with anything. Any of his behaviors can be justified. I thought Trey Gowdy's opening statement on the bias was probably the clearest and most emphatic refute of his position. Here's clip 15.
Agent Strzok, despite the plain language of his text and emails, despite the inspector general's report, and despite common sense, doesn't think he was biased. He thinks calling someone destabilizing for the country isn't bias. He thinks promising to protect the country from someone he hasn't even begun to investigate isn't bias. He thinks promising to stop someone he is supposed to be fairly investigating from ever becoming president isn't bias. He thinks talking about an insurance policy to keep someone from becoming president isn't bias. That's for one of the folks he was investigating. He has a different set of rules for others that he's investigating. Agent Strzok thinks saying someone he is allegedly investigating should be elected president 100 million to zero before he ever interviews her. He doesn't think that's bias. Agent Strzok thinks pronouncing someone innocent before bothering to interview more than 30 different witnesses isn't bias. He thinks claiming you can smell the Trump supporters isn't biased, but he doesn't say a single solitary word about being able to smell the support of any other candidate. To him, that isn't bias.
That's Trey Gowdy from South Carolina answering, or stating rather, that where there's bias, there's actually bias all the way through. Well, There was some information that actually came out in yesterday's hearing. The Hill talked about it. I think it actually came out as an email that was finally turned over a few days before the hearing, and it was Jim Jordan who pressed Peter Strzok on it. But I'll just go through a little bit of John Solomon's piece at the Hill. We've got a few minutes left, and let's just see how far we can get through this particular piece. But it says, we know from public testimony that the dossier author and former British intelligence agent Christopher Steele shared his findings with the FBI in the summer of 2016. And so this article explains how that the first version of the dossier came to light in the summer or fall of 2016. And then later that year, it was Senator John McCain, and he's no fan of Donald Trump, but he provides the FBI with a copy of the dossier, another copy of the dossier in November of 2016. John Solomon says, now memos the FBI is turning over to Congress show the Bureau possessed at least three versions of the dossier, and it's mostly unverified allegations of collusion. Each arrived from a different messenger, McCain, Mother Jones reporter David Korn, and Fusion GPS founder and Steele boss Glenn Simpson. That revelation is in an email that disgraced FBI counterintelligence agent Peter Strzok wrote to FBI executives around the time that the BuzzFeed published a version of the dossier in January of 2016. So BuzzFeed produces the dossier. Remember, all of that was following that final meeting between Comey and President Trump, and then CNN had the hook, and they wrote about it, and then BuzzFeed printed it. And then when that happened, Peter Strzok emailed all of his buddies there in the FBI, there at the DOJ, and says that, yeah, this version, it kind of aligns with this one and this one. There were other versions that the FBI had retrieved over the last 6-8 months. Our internal system is blocking the site, Strzok wrote in a document posted on BuzzFeed. He wrote of the document posted on BuzzFeed. This set is only identical to what McCain had. It has differences from what was given to us by Korn and Simpson. So he's talking about the BuzzFeed one, the McCain one, the Korn and Simpson one. BuzzFeed getting it from one of those three, I suppose, perhaps Kane. It says the significance of Strzok's email is obvious to investigators who reviewed it in recent days. The FBI is supposed to be immune to manipulation by circular information flows, especially with sensitive investigations such as evaluating whether a foreign power tampered with an American election. So it's this circular information. It says, yet in this case, the generally same information kept walking through the FBI's door for months, recycled each time by a new character with ties to Hillary Clinton. So they kept knocking on the door of the FBI and said, hey, did you get the dossier? They got the dossier. They didn't do anything with it, or they didn't do enough. And then someone else came knocking. Hey, did you get the dossier? And over again. It says that someone was struck whose own anti-Trump bias was laid bare by his personal text messages. He first opened a case on Russia-Trump collusion on July 31st, 2016, after the first flow of information then escalated to get a warrant targeting the former Trump advisor in October after a second flurry of allegations. And then finally, listen to this statement. The pattern is so troubling that one investigator said this to me, the dossier and its related dirt was on a circular flight path aboard a courier service called Air Clinton, and the FBI kept signing for the packages over and again until finally, after the setup, remember it was set up by Clapper and Comey, the meeting with Trump, all of them in collusion, with CNN and BuzzFeed, the dossiers made public. It was the excuse used for the warrants, spying on Carter Page, the informants, the spies. All of this. Now the special investigation, the special counsel, and it's still going. And no one's held to account. It highlights, it certainly does, just like my father said in Saving America from the Radical Left, temporarily, just how close the United States came to losing its country. I've played this clip before. This is Newt Gingrich from about a month ago, clip 16.
But it unravels gradually, and it keeps unraveling. It's going to keep unraveling some more. Every week that goes by, we learn new things. They're horrifying things. And frankly, this should remind all of us how close we came to losing the country. That you had between Obama and Clinton a total disregard for the American tradition, a total disregard for the truth, whether they were lying about Benghazi, or they were lying about bin Laden, or they're lying about the Russians, or they're lying about the campaign. These people didn't care because they came out of a left-wing background.
That's Newt Gingrich. About a month ago, some comments that that align closely to what my father had in that May-June issue of the Trumpet magazine. Saving America from the radical left. He talks in that piece about how that the whole investigation is just a hoax. And that the more we learn about it, more and more corruption comes to light. As my father said in that piece, we're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and to stay in power. They have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they are above the law. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.